Welcome to today's episode of Fire in the Belly. This is where we get to hear some pretty inspiring stories from some amazing people. You know, it's always an absolute pleasure to sit down, take time out, and have a warts and all conversation about their journey. I'm always intrigued by what it's taken for people to get to where they are today. And hopefully, in this interview, we get to hear some more about that. From this, my mission is to help people to find their own fire in their belly, and from that, to live the mightiest version of you. So without further ado, sit back, relax, and enjoy today's guest. Success is a process, not an event. Hello, and welcome to Fire in the Belly. Today we have myself, Mighty Pete, and we have the Paul Keenan. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Hey, Pete. How are you, man?
Awesome, awesome. Welcome to the show. Been looking forward to having you on.
So. Yeah, it's good to be here. I'm enjoying my slots now on podcasts. I think I've hit number three now. I'm on a roll.
Big time. That makes you sort of gone from amateur to novice or the other way around. I can't decide. I love it. It's a great medium. I mean, you've won yourself, haven't you? So do you want to just tell people about you, really?
Yeah, so I started my own podcast started December 2020, and at the time I was realizing that I had a lot of content in my head that I wanted to get out, and I wanted to put myself out there more, challenge myself, because I've been hiding away for the best part of 12 months. So I set myself a challenge that I was going to release a podcast episode every week for 12 months. And so far I've kept to that task. And yeah, we're going okay. And it was, for me, the podcast was about, selfishly, I guess it was about me, and getting my ideas and my beliefs, my kind of philosophy and across in terms of what I think. It's called the Mind Your Muscle podcast, but it's not really from a personal training perspective. It's more from the personal development aspect.
I'd take it the two go hand in hand, do they?
100%. For me, they really, one, it's not that one leads the other, but I think at times whenever I work with clients, we can use both aspects. So we can use an aspect of action first in order to help move people forward, to gain a little bit of momentum, confidence, and motivation. And then sometimes we can also come at it from the other angle, where we're starting to look at maybe habits or changing belief or changing attitudes in order to allow people to step into that space where they're maybe able to take some physical action. I don't know if it, dichotomy is the right word there, but there is certain maybe synergy in terms of that as well. You know, I think it works both.
Which came first? I mean, your background is in personal training, PT, and I mean, mindset come first or PT come first, or was it a sort of a all together?
Well, I suppose technically PT stroke sport came first. I played football most of my life. Never at any level that anybody thought was any good, but I played. And I actually went to Leeds Met Uni and done a degree in leisure and sport. And my choice at the time for picking Leeds along with five other UCAS choices was that they were a host of Premier League football at the time. So my six choices were based on Premier League football cities, and Leeds won the bill. I went to Leeds. I worked a little bit, Leeds United, just in study support, which is education through football. And then I went and coached football for a couple of summers out in the States with Major League Soccer camps. And yeah, I guess, you know, sport's always been part of my life. I kind of got into training a little bit at uni and dabbled about the disc muscles. That's the biceps, just for anybody who's confused. They actually didn't get very big. They're about as skinny as my legs. But I don't end up doing a physical transformation after. I kind of give up the football because of the kids. And from that, people just started asking me questions. I think that's normally what happens. You know, somebody gets in shape and then it's like the questions of how do you do that? And, you know, what did you do? And these things come along. But that kind of people asking me gave me just this planted a seed that, you know, I could help them, and I was helping people more from a nutrition aspect at the time. And nutrition, something that I actually suck at. Like I was really crap at science, in school, and I kind of transfer that to my clients, to be fair, at the minute, in that I just keep things basic for them and keep things simple. And it actually really seems to work pretty well. But yeah, so the personal training, though, itself didn't come until after the mindset. So it was only the really going and doing and starting that personal development journey that I guess gave me the balls to go and do the PT aspect of what I was doing, because I was in a good, secure government job, had been in it for 13 years. The job, basically, you only leave in one of three ways. One, you retire. Two, you die. Or three, you get sacked. So I actually, you know, I wanted something different. I could feel a calling, and there was a real shift in me, inside me, a state of anxiety, basically, that it was just, you know, this wasn't right what I was doing. And, you know, I was fighting against it and fighting against it. And eventually there was something that pulled me. And yeah, that's when it started. And I guess I've actually spent more on my personal development journey than I have on my personal training journey. But I honestly believe that it's helping more clients at the minute. And even, you know, today, I just got a message through from somebody there today that, you know, we started another intake yesterday on a 90-day program, which is a trial that we're doing. And I got a message just through this evening saying, I'm so glad I signed up. A couple of months ago, I thought my life was over. So, you know, and I know that the aspect of what we do in our program, in our coaching, personal development, and looking at the self beyond physical is something that a lot of people need, always have done, always will. And it is something that we focus on more than body image, really.
Do you say, is that a bit of a niche for you then, or a niche, whatever you want to call it?
Yeah, well, I say niche. I just can't get that niche. That just sounds like something you got to scratch.
Just for our American friends out there.
Yeah. Yeah, I do believe it is. You know, and I know that there's a lot of coaches out there who are grasping that right now, that there is this connection between mind, body, which has always been talked about, but never really probably developed to any level en masse. There are people out there and coaches, you know, who do it and are probably known for it. I gotta say that I don't really know anybody does it, and it's maybe a little, I don't know, ignorance on my part, but I don't really follow anybody in the fitness industry anymore. I want to try and cut my own cloth, because for a while, you know, I was not following people to copy, but I was following and just it wasn't sitting right, and I was just getting confused myself, and I really wanted to make sure that I started to get the message across that I want to give out to people. And really that is all about the underpinning aspect of our identity and self-image, and how our thoughts and our beliefs bring a client to me in the first place. Because yes, clients 99% of the time will come to lose weight, to drop body fat, whatever, get fitter, you know, whatever that physical aspect is, but they've got there because of the choices, and those choices are mindset.
That's intriguing, really, isn't it? You know, that's, I mean, in some ways we're all so similar, you know, we all want very similar things, but the reason why we come is might be slightly different, but it's all there, you know, strengthen mind, strengthen mindset, and strengthen body, you know, and the three all are intrinsically linked as such.
Yeah. So we look at, I guess, the three areas of our understanding, which is the physical, the intellectual, and the spiritual, in a way. So the physical through the training and what we can get the body to do, the intellectual in terms of trying to educate our clients. At the minute, we only work with women. And again, just today, conversation with a client that, you know, who came to us 5 weeks ago, seriously under-eating, and it's trying to help to shift that mindset and change that relationship with the scale. And I know that a lot of women struggle with that, and trying to help clients understand sometimes, now this obviously doesn't apply to all clients, but there are clients who come to us who are under-eating and not able to lose the weight that they want. And it's because they're under-eating. Their body's been in a calorie deficit for so long that they're not seeing any change. And the only thing that they can think of is to eat less. So I turn around to them and tell them, actually, we're going to increase your calories here. And in 5 weeks, we've increased that woman's calories by 50% in 5 weeks. And she is dropping body fat still. So that's not to say that she's in a calorie surplus and she's eating more. She's still in a deficit. It's not possible to lose weight while you're in a surplus. So she's still in a deficit. Even though we've increased them by 50%, she's still in a deficit, but she's feeling so much more energetic. She's feeling better in herself. Her clothes are better and fitting. So yeah, and we got to take that individual approach with a client as well. So I know everybody talks about a cookie cutter approach, and to an extent, there has to be some level of cookie cutting, because there has to be a platform, there has to be a process, you know, there has to be a base to build upon. But beyond that, beyond our structure, beyond our plan, we got to look at the client as an individual, and I got to get to understand them, what they need on various levels. And I'm a little bit nosy. And again, this probably comes from my previous career where I would have been dealing with the public regularly and having to conduct kind of doorstep interviews, if you would like, and ask questions and find out things. So like, I know my clients' occupations, I know their partner's names, I know their kids, I know their kids' names at times. You know, I want to know the full picture, because in order for us to get results, and I guarantee results, it's what I do, is, you know, whenever I set a goal with a client, a 90-day goal, I'll guarantee that result. And I'll do that based on me understanding everything that's going on in their life. And that support systems that they have, you know, from family, from friends, from kids, from partner, it has to be all in. The support has to be all in. And I can't have a client come on board with us and a partner not knowing or not being involved in the decision-making process, because if there's any issues then, you know, whether it be financial or otherwise, we're going to have stress, we're going to have tension. And that's the opposite of what I'm trying to bring into someone's life.
That's really intriguing. So, I mean, instead of, as you say, instead of having, no, secrecy is probably a bit strong, but, you know, an incongruence, let's say, you know, that there's a misalignment in the values or family wants, expectations, beliefs, that actually you're saying, no, guys, it's all out on the table and this is all done together. That's a really interesting approach.
Yeah. And again, like for me, I said, it has to be all in, because we know ourselves, you and me, that you're a product of your environment. And if we want to change ourselves, then we got to look at our environment. And it's not always going to be possible for clients to change, obviously, your partners, how they feel about things and that. So thankfully, so far, I haven't been working with anybody whose partner has been against them doing anything. And, you know, I don't know how I will deal with it whenever that happens, and it will happen. And I look forward to it happening. And, you know, I'm also very clear with clients that, you know, this is a discussion that you need to have with your partner, because they need to know what you're doing. They need to know the cost. They need to know what's involved. And if you want, I'm happy to get on a call with them. You go away, you make that decision, you have a chat. I don't do hard sales. Quite the opposite at times. In fact, there are two or three occasions where I've asked a client 4 times, are you sure you can afford this? Not that it's astronomically expensive, but that just, I understand that perhaps a single parent, kids, you know, and there are obviously things that I want to make sure, again, it's not about adding stress. And financial stress is one of the biggest, you know, issues in terms of relationships and family cohesion. So I don't want to be a part of that. I want to do the opposite. Like I said, I want to reduce stress, and where I can, you know, help people financially and give advice. And we do that within our group as well. And we have some self-employed people in there. And, you know, we had one of both our friends, Lisa Stevenson, helping a couple of the women out with stuff within their business. Again, just because that's going to help overall. And I know if I can help on that side of it, they're actually going to take bigger action, better action, in line with what I want them to do to achieve results, and then that's going to improve our business too.
No, I love it. I mean, that's a more holistic approach. You know, it's including all the different environmental factors. You know, makes sense. Tell me, before we really get into it, I mean, what does fire in the belly mean to you?
That's a question that, since you started this thing, that I keep wondering, what does it mean to me specifically? And for me, I guess it's now become about asking myself every day, what can I do? What am I capable of? And questioning myself more about, you know, what is it that I'm really trying to achieve? What is it that's driving me? What is it that I want to be known for? Not in an egotistical way, but in a legacy. And, you know, what I don't want to just build something for myself, because, you know, it's like we grow up, which we are, we're in the 40s now, we're over that 40. And, you know, I think that everything that I'm doing right now and everything that we do is probably going to be for our kids. So, you know, what the house, the business, whatever, what we're building is really for them. And, you know, I talked about this with my parents too. It was about this aspect of kind of generation improving upon generation, and, you know, each generation helping the next, whether that be through a house being paid off or houses getting left to kids and stuff. And for me, that's how I look at it, in that, well, I want to try and make the biggest impact that I can, not just for my kids, but for other people's kids too, and to improve lives. And that goes way beyond the scope of a personal trainer. And I get that. And it's nearly almost a bit, you know, kind of vomit in your mouth at times whenever maybe you hear somebody talking about it like that. But that is the truth. And I think that I can have a greater impact on people doing what I am doing now than doing what I was before. And before, I was in the police and I had, you know, a lot of responsibility, a lot of authority, a lot of opportunity. But I just felt that I wasn't fulfilling my potential there, and that my potential was determined by what other people were going to allow me to do, whether that be through scoring me on assessments or anything else. And I guess at the end of the day, the fire in the belly for me was, I want to prove myself to myself.
Well, and have you?
No. Not yet. I don't think we ever will. I was actually chatting the other day to somebody and was talking about failure and success. And, you know, for me, failure now, it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist anymore. It did a couple of years ago. I felt that I failed, but now it doesn't exist. For me, now it's learning. It's every mistake is that learning curve. But equally, failure doesn't exist, and neither does success, because whenever we achieve that thing, we'll still go to the next one. You're the same. You get something, then you'll set the next goal. All right. So again, success doesn't exist then either. So, you know, I think that's part of the fun, is that if we can realize that we're never going to reach that, but we just enjoy the journey. And it's like, for me, it's problem solving. You know, that every day, that's what I'm doing with clients. Every day, that's what I'm doing with people. That's what I've done every day in the place, was solve problems. You know, we're looking to solve, how can we work this out? How can we sort this out? And it's no different. And it's one of the big skills that I took across with me, in that I could communicate with people fairly well, even though I actually genuinely am a quiet guy, until you get me talking about something that I'm passionate about and interested in. And people always say that. It's like, you don't talk until it's like something you're interested in. I'm like, well, yeah, that's kind of the point.
More efficient.
Yeah. So, you know, that is something that I brought with me. And try not to be an idiot and annoy people. And I've probably done my fair share of annoying people, you know, as a PT and as a coach, and things I've done over the last couple of years in business, not done it to annoy people intentionally, but done it. Some acting from ego, some acting from insecurity, some acting from just, I guess, pushing the boundaries too far, setting the goals too big, looking to go too quick. And but like I said, you know, at the time I looked at it like a failure, like a breakdown, and everything else. But ultimately what it's done is it's now put me on a greater trajectory than I've ever been on before with my business, with my personal life, with, you know, my day-to-day activities and time, and even, you know, my mood, my mindset. I'm a lot more relaxed now than I probably was a couple of years ago, even though I see it now that I have more responsibility, I have more clients responsible for, and business is growing and business is great. And, you know, I'm able to work from home and take my son to school. And, you know, it's nice to see a bit of sunshine out there that we can get out and start to kick a football about. And remind myself that I'm definitely not as good as I once thought that I was, that I never was. I am loving life right now again. And there was a point not so long ago that wasn't the case.
I love that. I mean, in general, would you describe yourself as, you know, are you driven by pain or pleasure? What's your typical, or do you have a typical sort of mode of operation?
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't say I'm driven by pain after going through what was definitely the most painful experience of my life. Whenever I opened a gym, technically a gym, nearly like three gyms in one, at the same time, and brought on staff and went 100 miles an hour. And whenever you're going at that speed, you're probably liable to hit a wall or get caught by somebody speeding. So I probably done both things. And it was a difficult time for me back then when that happened. Making decisions that were probably out of character, making decisions that probably being driven by money, I think, back then. And it's not that I'm not driven by money now. Money is important. But I've actually changed my relationship to money. And although I always focused and grew my business initially on, you know, my service to clients, and the business didn't feel, the gym didn't feel because of lack of clients. It was just piss poor financial planning, massively. And whenever it imploded, I was on a guest on someone's podcast there last week. And I just said, you know, it was like a death. It was like a mourning process. And I didn't want to do anything. I didn't want to get off the sofa. I basically didn't get off the sofa for months. I didn't go out, couldn't do anything, couldn't speak to, I could hardly even speak. Even people come into the house, I just sat there kind of staring at the walls, on medication, psychiatrists, different things. In order at that point to try and get me through what I was going to do. And, you know, people around me telling me and saying, you know, it'll get easier, it'll get better. But when you're in the problem, you don't see that. All you see is the problem. And at that time, the problem just seemed so big. But thankfully, I have good people around me, and I have a family member who was and is a great support in terms of financial advice, who I probably should have went to at the start. But eventually he came in, I don't know how to describe him. Kind of like if you think of Russell Crowe and Gladiator, and he just came in with a shield, and he put a shield up, and he just got me space. And that's what I needed at the time, was space in order to allow myself that thinking time as well. And, you know, I almost walked away from the PTN and the coaching. I applied for a job. I went for an interview at Power NI, and thankfully I didn't get it. And then a couple of weeks later, I started PTing a friend back just in his garage. And then I went and I started working in a gym again locally for a few weeks, just getting that buzz back. And then we get hit with lockdown. And I was thinking, is this another sign? Is this another sign to give up? But I didn't, because one thing that always stuck in my head from personal development was that the goal shouldn't change, only the plan. And that's really what I've focused on. So my goals haven't changed, just simply the plan to get there. And that's one of those big goals, is to impact the lives of a million people by 2025. And that is a goal that I've no idea how I'm going to achieve. I just know that I've got another few years to get there.
I'm intrigued slightly, you know, you talked about, you know, almost, I don't think it was necessarily the wording, but you talked about almost like a money paradigm, you know, and that, do you know where that originally, you know, originated? The only reason I'm curious, because I think it's probably quite common for a lot of people, you know, whether it's fear of losing money or not making money or having too much money or whatever, you know. And
yeah, I mean, I think at the time, whenever I went to do the gym, I probably had more friggin' money than I'd have ever had in my life. And it was, there was, I think, almost a greed out of it. And a case of let's get more. But not even from like being flashy with it. It wasn't, I don't mean greed like that. I just mean like, how can I make more? And it was like nearly this challenge was, I can do this. It was problem solving on overload. I was almost manic in what I was doing. And you know, you use the words, yeah, money paradigm. And I think probably throughout my life, I didn't have a great relationship with money. I've thrown a lot of money at cars over the years. And you know, just spending not on silly things, but just spending. And that was it. The money was just, I was just throwing the money out there, and I really didn't take into consideration the sheer amount of money that was going to be required to do what I had intended to do. And I think I was pushing from the wrong perspective by that point. I had lost a little bit of focus. I was too focused on the money at that point and wanting to go too quick. There was no need for me to go that quick, because we had taken, in terms of what I was doing at the time, was mostly small group personal training, where I had like about 22, 23 clients in the June of that year. And whenever we opened the facility, and by the time it closed, which I think I must hold the record for the quickest closure in history, I think it was 3 months. But we'd taken it from 22 up until 83, I think, within that couple of months period. So again, you know, attracting clients and that service and getting results was never the issue with me. It was more just about pushing too quick. And, you know, I talk about that I had to change my relationship with money. And I think I had to learn the lesson, and I had to learn it a really hard way. And, you know, the good thing is I'll not be able to get a phone on credit for the next few years. And it'll do me absolutely no harm, because what it's causing me to do is to make better decisions, to slow down, to look at actually having money in my hand before I go to purchase things. I think you either get what you want or you get the lesson. And I got the lesson.
Harsh one. One of the hardest lessons of your life.
Yeah, 100%, definitely. And not just on me. On so many people, you know, it impacted a lot of people. And that took me a long time to get over. And when I say get over, it's not like I don't think about it, and it's not like I don't dismiss it, but I've stopped carrying it now. Because I had to let it go. I was acting from a place of what I thought was right, and I thought I was doing the right thing. And I've been able to accept that now. And you know, I put family and friends and staff through things, you know, that made their lives difficult, which I have, you know, I've tried to change and tried to balance that out in some way where I could. And it's not always possible, because, you know, I'll never be able to make things right with everyone, but I made things right where I could. And that's really all I can do, and just accept responsibility for everything that happened was me. It was on me. It was my decisions. It was nobody else's. It was my responsibility, and I'm definitely not going to let anybody take that away. It was me that done it.
How How has your energy shifted then on the spiritual side? I mean, we talked about the physical, the intellectual, and the spiritual. I mean, through this, and you know, when you have that buildup of energy and what's going on, and then how do you change that or invert that energy into something more useful?
Yeah, I think I probably used to use the gym as an outlet. I still do, you know, I still need that physical training. I think we all do, because that energy aspect, you know, it has to move. And if and I do this with our clients, you know, when we do our sessions during the week, we go against the grain in terms of what the gurus are out there telling PTs and coaches not to do, is don't do Zoom sessions with your clients. But you know what? Our clients love it. And I love doing it with them. And I love getting a slam ball, or I love getting some imaginary sledgehammers out or imaginary lightsabers and just beating the crap out of things and releasing that physical energy and laughing and having fun and actually doing a little bit of mindset coaching when we're doing it and explaining to them, you know, why we're trying to release this physical pent up energy in the first place, that, you know, can be coming from anxiety or whatever else. And just trying to help them. Again, there's an intellectual aspect with the physical. I don't know anybody else who does mindset coaching while they're doing Zoom sessions, PTing and slam balling and squatting and jumping about. But I have tried that, and it has been slightly successful on days. Just whatever comes into my head. But in terms of, you know, the spiritual aspect of my growth, it has come more through, I think, gratitude, definitely, and love. And Aini now as well is something that I've been looking at a lot recently, and the reciprocity of life in terms of, you know, what we give out, we get back. And that's what I always worked on from the start of my business, was giving more to people. Like whenever I was PT, and we used to do like client Sundays where I brought the PT clients in on a Sunday and we'd have trained together, I'd have trained with them and would have stuck a couple of pounds in a charity box. And you know, I would have run coaching calls at the time, and there's nobody else doing that. You know, this was 2017. I was integrating self-image coaching in with clients back then as well, which was basically a 2-hour sit down before we even stepped in the gym. And that wasn't really incorporated in the price, because, you know, for a self-image session with me, a couple of hours sit down at the minute, it's a few hundred quid. And I was doing that back then, and really I had to reconnect with that. I had to reconnect with that aspect of, why am I here? Why am I doing this? And it's something, you know, that I talk to our clients about a lot, because we do mindset coaching a lot every week, basically. And I know that people always want to know how, but how is the wrong question. It's why. We got to keep asking why. Why am I doing this? Not how did I do it, or, you know, how did you build the business? How did you, haven't paid for Facebook advertising, haven't paid for any advertising since December last year, and we now have brought on just over 50 new clients, I think, since January, and we've only dropped 3. So our retention rate is massive as well. And it's from this aspect of, you know, I will give whatever I can to help people out. And, you know, I think that's my duty. I have a responsibility. If I can help someone, I will. And, you know, we'll do what we can. And if you give the people what they want, then they'll give you what you want. I do believe that was a Zig Ziglar quote. And again, it's something that I've been looking at, and it ties back into Aini and the reciprocity of life. And, you know, just basically giving from that place of love. And one thing that has helped me is Reiki. And I work alongside a Reiki master who works alongside me in the business in Volume Fitness. And so that's Linda, Linda Douglas Therapies. And Linda came in March, and she works with her clients mostly on a Thursday evening, which is our kind of relaxation evening, where she does a mindfulness meditation visualization on a Thursday evening. But she'll also work with our one-to-one clients for a few weeks as they move towards their end of their first 12-week block with us, around emotional support, emotional healing, different things like that. So for me, clearing that aspect of energy, and being able to understand as well, like why I was doing things. And in terms of my journey, I was working with Linda before basically the crap hit the fan with the gym and everything else. And she's seen all that coming. She told me about it, but not in the way in terms of like, this is going to happen. It was, she's seen something and it physically drained her in front of me. And I seen that. And she said that she had to step away at the time. And you know, I get that and I understood it. But there was an aspect of her support that I feel now is just kind of running through our business and what we do, a softer approach to it. You know, I do bring the physical, the training and everything else, but that has to be balanced out because the body can only push so far. And we also need to not just understand and use the mind, but we need to relax the mind. We need to still the mind. And, you know, whenever we're looking and I'm looking in the background there on your mantelpiece and I see the book that you have released, you know, about being heard. And I think sometimes we've got to listen to ourselves as much as listening to other people. And that's something that I am definitely learning more to do. I'm not saying that I'm meditating or anything like that, but I'm just kind of listening and asking myself, you know, why am I feeling like this or why am I thinking like that? Or, you know, why am I making that decision or why am I doing this? Or why am I giving my time there? Or why am I not doing something here? And I'm starting to listen to myself more for those answers.
Just the way you speak, I mean, I'm getting a lot more, it's like reflection and respect and balance, you know, it's quite a calm approach is coming across. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah. And I haven't even had any diazepam, Pete. but yeah, it is. And I think that's what I've always tried to do. And that was my approach in my job before was I don't need to be going in there being the big lad. I don't need to be going in there shoving people around, shouting at people. I think if we do that, then we've already lost control. And it kind of goes back to something I remember from football, and it was the great Paolo Maldini, the Italian defender, probably one of the greatest defenders of all time. And what he talked about, something he said was like something like, you know, if I had to make a tackle, I knew that I'd already made the wrong decision. So basically that if he had to put his foot in, that he'd already made a mistake before that. So for me, that's reading the game a little bit more. And in order to read the game, you've got to be relaxed and you've got to be calm. I mean, I'm out there kicking the ball about my wee boy now who's just started to play football. He's 8. And I've never pushed him into it before. He's just kind of started it himself and he wants to play and I'm out there kicking with him. And I'm just constantly telling him, relax, just relax, you know. And one minute he's out there shooting with his Nerf gun. He was actually, as we were on tonight there, he was out with his camouflage in the back garden with his Nerf. I don't know what he was shooting. But I asked him earlier on, just as we were playing, I said, what does a sniper do before he shoots? And he said, he breathes out. So he lets it out to relax, you know. And that's just, for me, that's part. And we do that in training too. Whenever we're, you know, we're squatting or we're lifting or whatever, we need to use the breath. And we blow out, okay, whenever we're wanting probably to contract the muscle. And it's the same whenever I'm wanting him to kick the football to relax or whenever he's about to hit that squirrel or whatever he's trying to hit with his Nerf bullet. I want him to breathe out because whenever I used to handle the firearm, I used to hold my breath. So I was crap.
Yeah, the squirrels are safer in those days. It's intriguing there that you mentioned a couple of times there, you know, about almost reading people. I mean, reading and intuition, where does that all come in for you? I mean, would you describe yourself as intuitive or is it a sense, you know, that you're picking up on?
No, I wouldn't describe myself as intuitive. I think I've got better at reading body language. And again, that aspect of listening. So people are saying something, but they're maybe not saying what they mean. So we got to try and understand that a little bit more. And obviously in the past, you know, I'd have done interviews And you'd have had body language and stuff that was obvious that somebody was trying to spoof you or, you know, coming up with answers. But, you know, whenever I'm talking with clients, I gotta ask deep questions, because I know there are times, especially at the start, where we're still trying to build that relationship up of trust. So I gotta try and show them that I'm understanding what they're saying. And that takes a little bit of time. And again, it takes that why. You know, it takes asking, you know, why does that matter to you? Or why did that happen? Or why did you feel like that? Or when did that start? You know, again, a client this week has been really unwell and lost their voice for the last 5 or 6 days. So one of my first questions was, what were your stress levels like about 3 to 4 weeks ago? And she said, well, yeah, I was in my old job and I just started a new one, and I was really stressed in the old job. I really wanted out. But then it just felt like I really relaxed whenever I started a new job. And for me, and this, I don't have any medical evidence to back this up, but for me, that was the release. For me, that was the anxiety that was built up and the stress that was built up in that last job. She stepped into the new role, has released, but the body has to release that physically somewhere, somehow. And it's actually manifested in a sore throat. So it was, to me, it was like, you know, she wasn't able to communicate as much about how she was feeling perhaps before, and now where this is manifested. And I get that a little bit now. We're working with Linda. Linda's very intuitive in terms of how she can read you and read energy. She is definitely intuitive and will know things about you before you meet her. That was my experience that I got. She was able to tell me stuff about me that I hadn't told anyone else that I was going to be doing. So I don't want to get too woo-woo on this. But yeah, I would definitely say I'm more into reading body language and listening than that aspect of intuition. Although saying that, again, going back to my last job, people would have said a little bit of the opposite as well, in that some of them didn't like going out in the car with me, because I would get them in, not in the bother, but I would get them into work, because I would find things that they would have, that they wouldn't see, or that they'd have missed, or a case of, you know, why did you turn left? Why did you not just turn right? Why did you turn left? And then we could get into a cluster or something. But for me, those were the fun things, and I enjoyed things like that, and just trying to pick up on something that wasn't right. You know, just somebody, even as simple as going through an amber light, was sometimes you just would have dismissed it, and then other times it would have just been, no, there's something not right there. Let's go and have a conversation. And again, you know, that's how I approached everyone, was having a conversation. And from that conversation, I was able to tell pretty quickly whether things were good or things were getting hidden. And that's, I guess, you know, that's transferred over with clients. And it's not that I'm trying to discover, you know, hidden secrets with clients, but we are registered as a safe place with Women's Aid. And I have made a few referrals recently. And I've done that because clients have felt that they can talk to me, and they understand that I have their best interests at heart, and that if I can help them feel a little bit safer and a little bit more secure in a home domestic situation, then that's going to, again, it's going to help their journey. It's going to help their journey with us. And I know that their journey with us is going to help someone else, because that's how we've grown our business this year, is all through referrals. It's all through referrals. People, clients telling their friends. And whenever you can get somebody and your friend tells you, you know, you should come in here and try this, it works. And this is different. This is a holistic approach. It's not just all about the scales. It's not just about the weight. There's something different here. There's something special. And I like to think that's what it is. And that's what we're trying to do, not to be special, but just to do something that is special for people.
How do you feel it now, being in that position to be able to do that for people?
It's, for me, it's an incredible feeling. And it's one that I'm now trying to pass on the clients, in that I want them to know the lives that they're impacting. And I want to, kind of shout about it, not really on social media, like my social media, but inside our group. You know, whenever new clients are coming in, I want our clients to know who's brought them in. And for the 11 clients there that we just brought on this week, I told them all to go and message the person who was influential in bringing them in and ask them for the link to join us, because I want them to know exactly the impact that they're having on people. And for that's the ripple effect. It's the domino effect. And that's how we've grown. It's because we've helped people, and then they've basically reached their hand back and helped someone else. And I think that's, we have a duty to do that in whatever you do. It doesn't matter whether it's personal training, personal development. It doesn't matter whether it's working in a bar, working in a kitchen. It doesn't matter where it's working in a field. I mean, I've done them all. I started out, I think my first job was picking mushrooms, and I got paid buttons for it. And, you know, then I went to and worked in a bar and restaurant and different things, you know. So I've had a very background myself in terms of employment. And I think at every stage that I've been in, I've just tried to focus from this aspect of maybe trying to over-deliver.
That's curious. Yeah, I mean, not sort of over-delivery. Tell us, what was Mini-Paul like?
Just as skinny as he is now. He was a kid who was big into football, and big into mates, big into his friends at the time. That's definitely changed. You know, when I was younger, we had a lot of boys knocking about, and we were able to go about and run the streets and climb over garage roofs and kick footballs against garages. And I mean, I don't know if you're allowed to do that anymore. There's probably a law against that. And I was quiet and probably a little bit antisocial, beyond my kind of main group of friends. I don't know at what point I started to come out of my shell. Probably whenever I actually left school, I think. So that wasn't until like lower sixth. I think I was fairly quiet up until that point, and then I left school because I went back to do A levels. And well, first of all, one of my A levels was French, and the French teacher gave us a homework every week. And at that time, I just wasn't into doing homeworks every week. So I actually switched to religious studies, which was quite ironic, because I was never really into religion, and I'm still not, in terms of the religion that certainly evident in this country, in terms of one side or the other. I am definitely more now into an aspect of spiritualism, in terms of understanding that there is something greater out there, but that I don't need it to be defined as to what that is, or that I need to argue. But yeah, growing up, was quiet, enjoyed football, enjoyed the youth club, and I don't really remember doing much beyond football. I think I had a ball at my feet for a lot of my life, and I never really done anything with it.
I mean, do we even need to ask? But I mean, what was the plan for when you grew up? What were you going to do?
I had no idea. I went and done A-levels because it was what other people wanted me to do. And that's not blaming someone else. That's just saying it's like, well, it was kind of what you did. You know, if you had the opportunity, you went and you done A-levels. I started that and I didn't like it. So I kind of dropped out in lower sixth. And I remember having the conversation with the careers teacher or tutor, whatever it was at the time, before I was leaving. And I can't remember if it was a man or a woman, but they just said, look, you know, if you want to go to university, this is going to take you an extra year. And I was like, yeah, okay. But I wanted to go there the way I wanted to go, not the way that the system was, that kind of spoon-fed learning. I'm not knocking A-levels, but it was different whenever I went to college. It was you were treated more like an adult. And if you didn't get stuff done, then, you know, it was really on you. And it was a different environment. It was a more relaxed than you would have gone in on a Monday morning with the Sunday hangover from being out. Well, obviously I was in Antrim, so it was the Deer Park Sundays, and a lot of boys would have missed the Monday mornings. But yeah, I can't even remember what the question was there, Pete. So I just went off on a tangent.
No, it's just that whole thing of what you were going to be when you grew up, you know, and what was inspiring you at that time?
Sport at the time. I went to Tech and I'd done, it was leisure and sport. So I went and I'd done a BTEC in leisure and sport, and I came out with full distinctions on it. We actually ran a little business that was part of it. When you were in there, you had to run a business. It was the tuck shop. And you also had to run a couple of social events. And
is there not a bit of a cross purpose there? You know, it's sport, tuck shop. It's like have some Christmas chocolate, yeah, and come and do some fitness.
Yeah, there was. And I think the main things that we had in the tuck shop were the Astro belts and big giant strawberries and chocolate sweets and crisps. There was no protein bars or protein shakes or anything. But from a business perspective, we understood that not everybody was wanting that body whenever they're 16, 17 years of age. So we ran the wee company, and we actually had the biggest turnover of any year. And it wasn't just solely because we were special business. It was more the fact that I was working in a bar at the time. So we got the bar for free. I didn't have to pay for it. So we pretty much made 100% profit on everything. And that helped in a big way then to take us to Germany on an exchange for 2 weeks. So it basically paid for that and broadened our experiences out there. And even like whenever I left uni when I left Tech and went to Leeds Met and done leisure and sports studies that I've done at Leeds Met. It was leisure studies that I've done at the Tech. I normally get them mixed up, but I am 40 now. But yeah, and even then, even when I was doing the degree, I still didn't know what I wanted to do. You know, PT wasn't in my head, coaching wasn't in my head, teaching wasn't in my head. I didn't know what I wanted to do. We were a victim of crime several times in Leeds. House was burgled. Jeez, I think nearly every house I was in was burgled. And I seen purse snatches on the street. I seen a distraction burglar. I remember, and this was probably the thing that pushed me towards joining the police, was that I remember I was sitting in our house, and I was sitting playing the PlayStation in the front room in the living room, and I could see a neighbor's house across the street. Didn't know the neighbors. We were students. We didn't interact. But I remember sitting, I was playing FIFA on the PlayStation, and I seen a white van pull up beside of someone's house and a ladder on top, and a guy got out and went to the front door, and somebody went out and he was looking around the side and stuff. And I just thought, that looks a bit sus. But I was in the middle of a game, and I didn't really know what to do anyway, because distraction burglaries weren't a thing. You know, they weren't in the media as much as they would have been at that time. I mean, this was in 2003. And half an hour later, there was a police car pulled up then outside the house, and I just thought, oh, you idiot, why did you not? That was like instinct that I didn't listen to. That was intuition, really. That, but it was reading the game, I guess. Still at the time, you know, there was stuff adding up that wasn't adding up, that didn't feel right in my stomach, but I didn't act on it, and that annoyed me. And so there was a few things like that, and that's how I ended up. After I went and coached football in the States, to come home, applied for the job, and then I went and done that job for 13 years. But it served a purpose, and you know, some good experiences, some bad experiences, and some life lessons. But yeah, did I want to know what I was going to be when I grew up? Absolutely no idea. I still don't. You know, I'm just winging this here at life.
Apparently we're grown up now, so we'll have to start losing that tag of when we grow up. I'm curious, like, how many times, I suppose, it's come across that you future paced. So, you know, there it's actually you're analyzing situations going on around you. You know, you talk there, and you know, you're saying the quote with, you know, and you know, the defender there. It's like almost if you have to take action, it's too late. And the same with almost when you're PTing, you're almost going, what's the background? What are the scenarios playing here? So you've got the physical action going on in front of you, but you're forward pacing this in several steps, really. I mean, is that a fair statement? Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, I think you have to. I think in any role as a coach, you've got to try and see and be aware of what's coming. Obviously, you're not always going to get it right. You're playing out scenarios in your head. Sometimes you're playing out worst case scenarios. And whenever I'm in there, especially working one to one with a client, I'm looking at problems. I mean, I'm looking at potential problems in the future, whether that be from somebody's gaits, the way that they walk, the way they carry themselves. Simple things like, is a shoulder lower than the other? You know, is there a hip issue? How's that going to impact if we're squatting or if they're complaining of, you know, a pain somewhere? Well, where's that coming from? And I want answers to that, because I know that if I can sort that out sooner rather than later, then that's going to be helpful to them. And they're going to appreciate that, one, I'm actually identifying that and not just, you know, putting them through something for the sake of it. And it's something that is slightly harder now that, you know, working as an online coach, that we really got to ask more questions about that. And then have, I suppose, in a way, a little network of almost referrals about where we send people to and kind of diagnosing things. And in terms of me kind of identifying what something could be and where they need to go for support and help. And that is definitely something that I'm not afraid to do. You know, I'll never say, oh, it's definitely this. I'll say, it sounds like it could be, and I think you need to go to, so that we can get an answer here. And I won't step out of my realm of qualification, which is simply a level 3 personal trainer. I'm qualified to work with pre postnatal women, but qualified and able and understanding and knowing are all completely different things. I don't want to step outside of my box there, and I will seek support where I can from others. I think, you know, whenever it comes to personal development and mindset and habits and working with general populations and getting kind of, not to be dismissive of the results that I get, but, you know, getting simple results of weight loss and body confidence, which is what our clients are coming to for us anyway. But that's where my focus is. I don't need and want to desire to go and learn more about anatomy and different things. And, you know, I'm not into sports performance or anything like that. I like who I'm working with, and I like the results that they get, and I like the impact that it has on their lives.
Is body consciousness or body confidence, sorry, is that all in the mind?
No, I don't think it is. There's an aspect of both. I think the term body confidence is, I suppose, is a difficult one, because as much as we would like to say that you should just be comfortable and confident in your body, if you're overweight, if you're obese, there's physical dangers there. There's reduced life expectancy, coronary heart disease, type 2 diabetes, higher risk maybe of other illnesses. And there's a certain aspect of body confidence around that, of body confidence of, can I walk up the stairs without, you know, going out of breath? Can I go to the shops? Can I do this? Am I confident in my body to go and do that? And then there's also the aspect of confidence of stepping out, as in, you know, maybe wearing something. That's another aspect of body confidence. Maybe wearing certain types of clothes. And we have an amazing client there at the minute who is showing her arms and her legs for the first time in years. These last couple of months, that's body confidence on a physical level, but it's definitely come through a shift in mindset. And the two have to go hand in hand. And we have clients who are perhaps, I don't know, size 24, size 26. And we have clients who are size 6. But they both have body confidence issues. So does that stem from the body? Does it stem from the mind? I think it stems from both. And I know that probably didn't answer your question, Pete. So sorry.
No. I mean, it's always interesting, though, isn't it? You know, how, you know, whether it is in the mind, whether it's comparisons, you know, all the different factors. And as you said, I don't think it's any one particular thing. You know, it's always intriguing. You know, all the everything that comes into play. You know, but Thomas, what are you great at, and what are you crap at?
Damn you. What am I great at? I think I'm great at problem solving now. And I think I'm actually just a trend about to solve a problem here at the minute. And that is to text my wife to see if she could come in here and turn on a couple of lights.
Sitting in the dark, it's a great problem solving.
Yeah. So, I think solving problems, probably being a little bit chill and relaxed, trying not to stress out, and treating people with respect, I think is I'm definitely getting better at that. It's not that I've been bad at it, but I'm definitely getting better at it. What am I crap at? I think I'm crap at what every man is basically crap at, and that's talking about emotional stuff. I will help deal with and, you know, talk to people and solve that and, you know, talk it out and work it out with people all day long. But just, here we go, here's the answer. Yeah, if you could turn that light on for me. There we go. We have light. There we are. Okay. Thank you.
Love it.
So
ask and you shall receive.
Yeah. So the crap, yeah, I think it's a man thing in terms of being able to talk about how we're feeling and talk about that. And, you know, I'm trying to do that a little bit more. And I definitely am better at doing that now than I used to be. And I think I'm better at talking with myself about it. So not kind of talking to myself, but talking with myself and helping myself process that a little bit more. And that's through journaling and gratitude. There's been two aspects to my journaling and gratitude. A lot of, certainly the first half of last year of 2020 was spent journaling from a having done it perspective and the impact that it was having on me. So I was kind of journaling at the end of a day or how I've been feeling in the last couple of days. So it wasn't from a, you know, grateful attitude, other than I was grateful that I could write this and see and kind of talk to myself about how I was feeling and the thought processes that were going through my head, until I was able to get to a point where I could actually go into being grateful for what I have, for what I've experienced, and then also for what's coming. And I know there's so much more coming.
It is so powerful. And it's kind of ironic, or I don't know if ironic's the right word, but almost there's a picture in the background. I think it's a reflection of a mountain, and it's, you know, there's as much below as there is above, you know, and it's sort of struck slightly with your journey that whilst you're almost displaying the sort of five stages of grief, you know, your desire, you know, your depression, anger, denial, frustration, until you come through to an acceptance, and almost, I don't know, that picture, what you talk about, your reflectiveness and your problem solving now, it sort of feels like it's where you're supposed to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, it does 100%. And I guess I was given a fantastic opportunity last year by Noel Smith and Seamus Fox to work within their company at the time, which was Elevate. I went in as a client success director to, ironically, coaches, gym owners, and PTs in how to grow their business and how to sustain things. And it was very much, I was able to operate from a place of, don't do this. You know, this is what I've done. This is what worked, you know, because there was a lot of stuff that I'd done that worked. And there was just other stuff that didn't. But yeah, it's definitely now given me so much more. I'm not saying so much more than what it took, but I know I'm definitely out on the other side of it and out on the other side of it strong. And really definitely moving forward now with a greater understanding of that. And like, you know, I said earlier, you know, I felt that I had to go through that. I had to learn that lesson, as hard as it was, you know, and then come in to the start of 2020 and the start of 2020 and say, you know, how can I make what was the worst year, what it ended was the worst year, into actually what was the best year. So how can I make the best out of that? And I think I'm doing that now. A long way to go, but I'm definitely back in the solution. I'm back in solution focused rather than problem focused. And it's not that there's not problems there, you know, because those problems that I created back then are going to be with me for a while, but I'm able to actually move through them now. And I can see a way through them. I can see a way out. I can see a way past them. And that has literally just taken time.
I mean, that's almost the required promotion to go from a coach to a mentor. It's like, been there, don't do this. That's a good idea. This is something to watch out for coming down the track for you. Do you know what I mean? It's a very different reflection as opposed to let's do this together. And that's a credit to you in many ways, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess that's, and it's something that I do talk about, is that, you know, we shouldn't be coaching when we're in the problem. So at the time, you know, it wasn't right for me to be doing that. I'd come out the other end of it by that stage. I started with the guys in Elevate like about 6 months really into that role after the whole gym thing. So I'd started to come back out of my shell. I'd started to talk to people. I'd started to coach people, you know, I'd had conversations with them about what happened and everything else. So, you know, I was coming out the other end of it. And it was, for me, it lined up at the right time. And, you know, it was a great opportunity that they gave me, the trust that they placed in me, to literally just say, okay, here's these clients coming in, these gym owners, PTs and coaches, and we want you basically to mentor them through the week with weekly one-to-one call support. And those guys, Seamus, would have done the sales and the mindset, and Noel would have done the marketing and calls and that as required. So yeah, having gone through the problems allowed me a greater scope to be able to help and guide people in a way. And it was ironic, it was almost a case of, are you for real here? Because I think I was only started with them 3 weeks, and then lockdown, all the gyms shut, and their offer, which was their offer and it never changed, was based on for gym owners and face-to-face PTs and face-to-face businesses. And with that shutting, then that kind of took the carpet from under our feet. And at that point, I was kind of charged with getting people to pivot really quickly in order to help try and stabilize some form of income until governments and whatever else sorted things out. And we had people in there whose sole income was based on a gym being open, or somebody in entertainment who could no longer do that. That was their entire income, and that industry, both industries were just shut. So there was zero income, and it was okay. Well, let's now look at this problem. But to every problem, there's a solution, because what I said at the time was, look, gyms aren't open, so nobody can go into gyms. So the solution is not in gyms, it's outside gyms. And the only place that you can go is really in your house. So it didn't give you much of a scope to decide what you were going to do. It was either you do this or you don't get paid. So the solution was pretty simple for me at that point. But then it was about developing a strategy and a system that could actually make that into a business for people. And some of our clients have gone on to do really, really well from it.
The common word of the last, I suppose, 12 months, whatever, has been pivot, right? And that seems to be something there that's, you know, almost sits right up your alley, you know, solutions, change, observations, you know, flex and turn and reinvent, really. It seems to be a right up your street.
Yeah, and that's now where I'm back at in terms of volume fitness in the business, in that we've just launched a 90-day program there that we are, again, trying a slightly different approach, in that we've brought in now a success coach to work with the 11 new clients. And just in terms of being that human touch point that people need. So they're not working with me because we're at capacity for one-to-one online at the minute. But there were still people out there that we knew needed support, that were asking for it. And like I said, you know, earlier on, I got that message tonight that somebody had thought, you know, that life was finished. And they're so glad that they joined, and that they joined because of someone else in our community who had recommended it to them. And that type of client joining, I know that type of client needs a little bit more support than just getting an app in their hand or told to, you know, go and exercise. That's not going to fly with them. You know, that there's deeper issues there that we will go on to address at some point. But for the first few weeks, all we're going to focus on is food and exercise. And that's what we do. You know, we're using that aspect of what we discussed earlier, was the physical, before we really move into spiritual and intellectual. Sometimes clients do need a very early intervention in terms of support, and they will go to work with Linda straight away. Others, we can work on the physical and the food first.
What are you most proud of? Not even most proud of, but what are you proud of in your life?
I guess I don't want to say that I have to say my kids, but I think my kids, you know, the three kids that are growing up to be happy, respectful, and have friends and have fun. And for me, that's an aspect of being the parent, of being the role model, and also for the fact that I seen that the role and the job that I was in was not going to be as helpful as others may think for being there for parent, being there for kids. And that, again, came from a conversation that I had a few years before I left, was from somebody, you know, who said, you know, he wished that he had been there more to see his kids grow up. Because you know, and it's not knocking the fact that, you know, you're working for somebody, because somebody will always be working for somebody, but sometimes there are jobs where you literally do not have a choice. You just have to, and there is no choice in those jobs. The choice is you do or you go. And you know, I was talking to, I put a post or something out on social media this week about, you know, life is choice. So not that life is a choice, but that life is choice, and that we get to make decisions at times. And for me, that decision that I made was as much for my kids and as for me, for being a parent and being present, it's five core values in volume fitness, and being present is number one. So being present is, you know, it's about turning up, it's about showing up, it's about being there, and really kind of backing up and doing what you said you're going to do.
That's powerful. What are you capable of? Do you know?
Sometimes I've kind of stayed away from that question for the last couple of years because it scared me. In terms of, I think I'm capable of a lot more than I'm doing right now. But I'm just very conscious about what happened before and where I pushed to. So what am I capable of? I'm definitely capable of more. I'm capable of what I'm doing now, 10x. Got to throw a bit of 10x Grant Cardone in there for the sake of it. But yeah, you know, I think why not? But if I do it, I'm going to do it a lot more chilled. And I'm in no rush because, you know, and I'm mentioning Grant Cardone there, a guy who's in his 60s, you know, and you know, probably didn't really, yeah, he was successful in his 40s, but he seems to be more successful now that he's, you know, hit the 50s and into the 60s. So I'm like, well, you know, I have a lot of my life ahead of me. I intend to be there for it now. I think I kind of say we're about halfway, Pete, aren't we? You're hitting about the 40 mark, or maybe halfway if we're lucky. And sometimes you're better lucky than good. So, I think that.
It is fascinating, right? Because, I mean, I think Grant Cardone talks about he's 41, 42 before he sort of even got onto the blocks and started to go, you know, and then he's now 62, I think, now, if I remember rightly. It's 20 years.
Yeah.
And he's apparently worth $600 million in personal value, dollars. Not that it makes a huge difference, but it's huge.
Yeah, and probably about has the same in real estate as well. So, and I know that I'm capable of more and that I'm going to explore that, but I'm going to do it slowly. I'm going to take my time now. And, you know, I'm kind of a bit more structured, a bit more rigid with my time. You know, I was chatting to you before we started that, you know, at the start of the week, I like to try and get as many of the client calls done as possible on a Monday and Tuesday. So that means long days, Monday and Tuesday. Basically, I'm up 7 a.m. session and, you know, it could be half 7, 8 o'clock before I'm finished, 15, 20 plus Zoom calls or whatever, plus PT session, plus school runs and different things in there. But I like to get that done at the start of the week so that towards the end of the week, I can start to work on the business rather than in the business. And if I need to take a little bit of time out, I can do that. I try and take a Thursday off now. So like the other day there, it was a nice day. So I dandered into the town with my son. He was off on Thursday. We took the dog in. We were able to eat outside for brunch, and it was nice to be able to do that and not to feel guilty for it. When I used to feel that, you know, if I wasn't working, doing something with the business and wasn't working, then I felt guilty that I should have been doing more because I needed to do this to provide for my family. And this is why, you know, it was why I started this and everything else. And then got a, am I okay to like drop another name here? Someone that I've kind of been mentored by, not one-to-one, but in terms of group, is James Wedmore. And one of the things that always stood out for me when I first started working through his programs was the quote that he's always used was the less you do, the more you make. And I'm really trying to live life by that now. So, you know, it's that aspect of working a little bit smarter. And you know, utilizing the time a bit better, and the time that I am working, making sure that I am working, and the time that I'm not, trying to, you know, this evening there after I finished calls, I was doing a little bit of reading. I've yet to finish your book. I've realized that whenever I started your book, I had three on the go. So I had this habit of not finishing books. So it's like, okay, so I've put yours down. It's sitting here to my right. And I'm nearly finished the first book that I started. The other book is up in next to the bedside. So there's two books getting done, then your book's getting finished. And I'm going to start creating a new habit of finishing books.
I love it. I mean, that reflectiveness, you know, and it's even, it's like, it's the SAS or the SEALs training, you know, slow is smooth and smooth is fast, you know, and I can really see that in your language. It's that kind of going, okay, the mind's racing, but let's just take it down a bit. We're still going to go far, but just need to change the gear here, you know, and that seemed to be something you're quite conscious of, or you're quite aware. And I suppose maybe that's what the experience has taught you. Maybe is that that a fair?
Yeah, and I think that's something that I'm reminding myself every week, because my brain is ticking over, especially whenever you go through periods of probably exponential growth. Then you're looking at the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. But I'm now reminding myself that the next thing is to enjoy the thing we've done, and to relax and you know, to celebrate that and to take the time over that. And it's not that we can't think about the next thing, but we don't need to act on it.
Well, as you say, once you get the exponential growth, then you're almost, you go into problem, or you change the energy and you like, well, we did it once, let's do it again. Let's double it, triple it, 10x it. The energy changes, and then suddenly it's, yeah, you change polarity and things start changing and shifting, maybe not necessarily for the better.
Yeah.
It's intriguing. It's intriguing. Tell me this, what's a bit of a guilty pleasure for you? You can take the guilt out of it if you want. Just have it as a pleasure.
See, over the last year, and I can't blame lockdown. I'm going to blame lockdown, but beer and whiskey. That over the last while, beer and whiskey and movies. I think just, you know, being in the house so much, and I can't remember why, but I started drinking Jack Daniels and Coke. And you know, I would have a beer and a Jack Daniels and Coke now on a Friday night. And that's coming to an end, though. That's coming to an end now, because I've made another commitment. I'm committed now to going on a Saturday morning and training with my brother at 9 a.m. in his garage gym that we put together a little while ago. So that means no alcohol on the Friday. And that's what I need. It's a guilty pleasure. I enjoy it. Mm. I enjoy sitting down and watching movies. And I'm a little bit annoyed that, you know, that the lack of quality of movies that have been out, because everywhere's saying, well, there's nobody creating movies. I've watched them all two or three times now. But yeah, that's the guilty bad pleasure right now. But I'm still working.
What's your go-to in the movies, or what's the standouts for you?
I still love a good action film. You know, the amount of times that I've watched the Bourne films, or Bad Boys, or last week, you know, it was probably number 10 times for Armageddon, Gladiator, some of the epic ones, really of the last 10 to 20 years.
Oh, well, I love it. And leisure and pleasure for you then, when you're just winding down or just recharging, where do you head off to?
Yeah, well, I guess for the last while, I probably haven't done much other than literally sit and watch a movie or read a book. You know, I can't even say go for walks anymore, because I haven't even done that much of that. I think as things start to open up, you know what, I will want to go out a little bit more and do different things and get out bits and pieces here and there, and start to enjoy being out in the fresh air again, and breathing in the fresh air. And yeah, just getting out again. I'm looking forward to it. I am looking forward to a night out a little bit. I haven't had one yet. I haven't ventured out. I'm in no major panic for it, or bars and that have obviously just opened, but I'm not really a big fan of queuing. So I'm happy enough, like I said, Jack Daniels and a beer in the house at the minute, until things are relaxed a little bit more, hopefully, or we get some stuff booked.
I love it. It's going to be a lot of change. Tell us, what's something that not a lot of people know about you?
I don't know, man, because my wife says I tell people too much. I don't know what a lot of people wouldn't know about me.
Is that an important thing for you? Do you like to just be just open?
I am actually quite private in terms of, you know, of myself, But, you know, if you get me talking about stuff that that's obviously interests me, then, you know, I will open up and I'll not be afraid to tell people, you know, the pains and the journeys that that I've been through. And yeah, I don't know about what somebody wouldn't know about me. Yeah, sorry, man.
What's the nicest thing someone could say about you?
That I care. I think for me that's it. I just want people to know that, you know, that I care. I want my clients to know that I care. Friends to know that I care, family that I care, and just people in general that I care, you know. And if you can hold a door open for somebody, or you can help somebody across the street, again, help an old lady across the street, I've done that. You know, that showing a bit of respect for people, I think that's important, and I hope that I do that, and I hope that I show that for the most part.
There's that respect again. Yeah, it's interesting. So tell me, I mean, if you were to summarize your fire in the belly in one or two words, what would they be?
Fire in the belly in one or two words. I don't even know if I can do that either. You pitched me the difficult questions at the end. I must be getting tired. Fire in the belly in one or two words for me is, it's basically being true to yourself. And that for me is, you say you're going to do something, do it. That's it. Say you're going to do it, do it.
It is all the beauty and all the ugly all in one, doesn't it? But it's real.
Yeah, and I think you have to, because if you start going down that path of saying things and not doing them, then you're not in integrity with yourself. And whenever you're not in integrity with yourself, then you're just telling yourself that you don't value yourself, that your worth is low. And you know, if I don't value myself, why would anyone else value me? If I don't value myself, why would anyone invest in me to help them?
No, so true. Tell us, where can people find you, hunt you down, track you, stalk you, any of the above?
Probably the simplest place is Facebook Volume Fitness. To the best of my knowledge, there is only one. I do believe that there is only one Volume Fitness. We could make a song out of that, but I'm not sure, it might have been covered before at some point. But yeah, Volume Fitness on Facebook, probably Volume Fitness on Instagram, Paul Keenan on Facebook, Keenan, and I always have to spell it because people never get it. K-E-E-N-A-N. All right. So it's like whenever somebody asks me your name, it's Paul Keenan, K-E-E-N-A-N. So I'm on Facebook. It's an open profile. You can hit me a friend request. You can send me some abuse. I don't care. If you send me abuse, I'll thank you for it and learn from it. And if you send me a friend request, as long as you're not from a foreign country and you're going to try and take money out of a bank account, I'll probably accept it. And if you're interested in learning a little bit more of what I do, then go and listen to our podcast, which is the Mind Your Muscle podcast. And if you're interested in maybe working with us, then you'll have to wait until September at the very earliest before we open our doors again. But there's a link. If you head through our profiles, you'll find some details on that.
Love it. Love it. Final message for the listeners. What would you like to leave them with?
I think just something that I said earlier, and it relates back to that care and respect, and that, you know, always think about, can you reach your hand back to give someone else a hand up? I think that's important. I think if we all done that, the world would be a far better place.
Love it. Paul, thank you for your time. Thank you for your openness. And listen, look forward to all the amazing things coming down the line. So best of luck.
Awesome, Pete. Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you.
Well, that was another great episode of Fire in the Belly. You know, this really wouldn't be possible without our great guests taking the time to share their personal journeys. And boy, sometimes it is personal. It's an absolute pleasure to have that, and then to hear the journeys that the people have been on. We've loads more episodes coming up soon, and it's always a pleasure to have guests on. If you do happen to know anyone with true fire in their belly, please reach out to us so we can share their journey, lessons and successes. So all that's left to say is have a great day, live with fire in your belly, and be the mightiest version of you.